You're listening to the Home Improvement Show on News Talk Radio, CJAD 800.
Yes, good morning. Look at the time. 9:05 and he's here. He took off his jacket. He settled in. Walter Assey from Renovco is joining us, as always, on the Home Improvement Show. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic, and welcome back.
Thank you very much.
You look amazing. You look refreshed, ready to go.
It's my moisturizer. we had some snow while I was away. Actually, I landed Tuesday, and it was I woke up Wednesday morning to the car covered in snow, which is, you know, we're Montrealers, and we're used to it. We should be used to it, but it's always a bit of a jolt, I guess. I guess it's a reminder of, you know, the 3 or 4 months ahead.
Yeah. This is coming from the guy, have a nice tan.
No tan.
Vitamin D for 2 weeks.
Yeah, it's nice to be out in the sunshine, which is something I think they take for granted out there in Southern California.
You're such a show-off.
Well, I do not tan. I'm chronic non-tanner. I get a burn, Walter, when the light goes off when you open the fridge door. That's how sensitive I am. Anyhow, it's nice to have you here with us. And I guess when it comes to the snow and that first snowfall, it's a reminder of getting the house ready for winter. And I think we talked about this over the last couple of weeks as November set in. And I guess one of the things that you mentioned, too, that used to be an issue, but it's not anymore because we have some new windows, thanks to Renovco, is a lot of times you suggest just checking to see how the caulking is around the and the ceiling is around windows, right, in order to keep the cold air out.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, even if you have a good quality window and it's not sealed properly, this is going to be a place where you're going to have some air infiltration. Now, in colder days, it's a good place to start seeing where you feel the drafts. Whether it's through, you know, a lot of times you could feel it even through the electrical plugs on exterior walls.
Yeah.
And, you know, in really drafty days, you might feel it in certain areas more than others. So that tells you that there's a big draft in that area, and there's something that you can do to stop that draft. So, if you know, there are special plugs for exterior walls. They come with a gasket, and the purpose of these plugs is to seal, to stop the drafts coming from the exterior wall. So that's, you know, little tricks. They don't cost much.
You know, I didn't think it would make any kind of a difference, but maybe it was Jan who told me about this several years ago, about just like you mentioned, just putting those little plugs in the electrical sockets, right?
Which is a
source of the cold air coming in.
Well, think about it. You have an average of 2 plugs per exterior wall. Yeah. So that's like, you have a 3-4 inches wall, a hole in that wall that's bringing in all the straps. So it does make a big difference. Mm-hmm. Smaller things, we don't always have to go fancy when it comes to looking at things to do to minimize, air leaks and what have you. Mm-hmm. And, it's just little things. The electrical plugs is a big factor. The caulking outside, obviously, insulation pockets are important. I have a tendency to like to, you know, come in with my thermal imaging camera, and I just look in colder days. I put it on the walls and
get a reading.
You see all the readings. You see all the pockets of, of the cold pockets in an exterior wall. What most people don't know, that with time, the fiberglass insulation loses its R value if it gets humid or wet. So, you know, in colder drafts, in rooms that are colder, it's good to investigate that a bit further. And when you renovate a room, slowly you start upgrading the insulation in these rooms as a must.
It's 9:09. If you want to talk to Walter and get some advice from him and just bounce something off him, let us know now. Call now and grab a line at 514-790-0800 like Abe did out in NDG. Abe, are you there?
Yes, I am.
How are you?
Good, thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. What's going on with the kitchen?
Okay, the question for Walter is, in my kitchen, I have an electrical socket, that's two sockets, and a light switch. The light switch controls three fluorescent lights over the sink. Now, what's happening recently is when I plug in my kettle into the electrical socket on the wall, I saw a spark, like a little spark, and so I wanted to know, is this a job for an electrician to change, or is it something that is not that difficult for me to do?
You know, when it comes to electricity and sparks, I always recommend you use a master electrician for sure, because there is a risk of a fire. Now, many, many things I would have to ask you, but one of them is, do you know what kind of, how old is your electric panel, and what kind, what brand is it?
It's a condominium apartment building, and it's roughly 20 years old.
Okay.
The brand, I'll have to go to read the...
Okay, so at least we know it's not a fuse box, not a fuse panel, it's a breaker, so that's a good thing. But
I'm sorry to interrupt you for one second. It does work. They both switches work.
Yes.
Just that I saw a spark and I...
Okay. So it could be just a loose circuit. I don't recommend that you do it yourself. Always call a master electrician. But what I would recommend that you do, if you want to just investigate it a bit further, is remove that plastic cover and see if, you know, the wires are loose in there. If the wires are loose, definitely it's something that you have to attend to as soon as possible, because that could create arcing for sure. Now, when you see those sparks, that means there's arcing happening somewhere, or there's an overload happening. What you want to ensure is that, you know, if it's just a question of loose wires, it's easy to fix and it's not a big thing. But if we find that, you know, it's not that and it's something else, then we have to investigate it a bit more. Typically, it could be an overloaded circuit. Now, in kitchens, usually we recommend separate circuits for all the appliances. We don't recommend that things get overloaded, especially that, you know, we have all these little gadgets now. We have the microwaves and dishwashers. So each and every one of them have to have its own separate circuit, dedicated circuit. Your plugs on the counter obviously have to be at least 3 feet out from water. And if it's not, have to be GFI. So these are little things you want to look for when you're looking in a kitchen setting about, you know, anything that have to do with electrical. Having said that, start by just taking out the plastic cover and just look at the wires to see if they're loose or not. Hmm. Okay? But make sure to shut your breaker first.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Abe. Good luck with that. Bye now.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Our home is, when did I buy it? So our home is coming up on 30 years. About 2 years ago, I replaced the electrical panel in the basement. We had some blown fuses, and I'm not sure what the lifespan is, but just be on the
side. Well, I mean, 20 years usually it should last a lot longer.
Yeah.
It depends on the brand. Like, for example, if you have a Square D type of panel, it's my favorite. These guys.
What's it called?
Square D.
Square D.
They're usually it's... Really, like, as far as I'm concerned, they're indestructible. I've had no problems with them, you know, during the years. You know, it's a good brand. And 20 years is not very long in an electric panel if the brand is right.
Okay.
So, but I mean, look, in your case, you know, it's not a bad thing. It doesn't hurt.
But you brought up an interesting point, and I guess you touched on it just as we wrapped up with Abe, that depending on how old your electrical panel is and... The age of your home. A lot of times when you buy these new, fancier, more powerful appliances, kitchen appliances, you know, maybe your panel can't handle it, right?
Well, that's one. That's one. And we see more and more now that there's the 200 amps that we all thought was, you know, sufficient for homes. Now with electric cars, it's becoming a lot more complicated, because the lowest amperage you can buy for an electric vehicle is 40 amps, and it's not really the recommended one. It's the 60 amps that's recommended as a minimum standard.
Mm.
So already you have 60 amps that's being eaten out from your 200 amps. So now there's going to be probably new standards for how much electricity you need in your home. With the introduction of electric vehicles, right? Mm-hmm. Now, having said that, those fancy appliances as well, you have to read the electric specs, because a lot of them, you know, require different, you know, wiring, and they have... So that becomes a bit more...
Challenging
as well.
Right.
So before you maybe buy those appliances, because we see it a lot, especially when you do kitchen renovations, people want to upgrade to the higher-end models, especially in, you know, nicer homes. Always consult your master electrician first.
Okay.
Let them read the things just to know how much electrical work you're getting embarked into before you make these purchases.
That's the kind of information and advice we love about having Walter on the show, the Home Improvement Show, 514-790-0800. Donna and Claire are coming to you right after this, but...
You might just need to tighten a thingamajig on the whatchamacallit.
This is the Home Improvement Show on CJAD 800.
Gotten a little cloudy in the last little bit. 920 with Ken and Walter Assey from Renovco. Here we go. Donna out on the West Island has been waiting. Donna, how are you?
Good morning. Welcome back. How are you?
Thank you. Thank you for that, Donna. Thanks for listening. What do you want to talk to Walter about?
Oh, Walter, please, please answer my question because this is an argument going on not only in my home but at work.
I love this. I love it. Set it up.
The correct way to install an electrical outlet. Like, is it the two? Is it like a face? Like you have the two eyes with the nose? A three-prong.
Yeah. That's a very good question, and it's a big argument indeed. You're right.
And after this, we're going to ask you about the toilet paper, which side you put it.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
So I'm going to make it very simple for you, and you might not like my answer.
Oh, no.
But there's no correct way.
Oh, you're kidding me.
There's no correct way. That is correct. There's a more commonly used way, but even if you put a plug sideways, it's an acceptable standard in electricity. So sometimes they do it, electrician, they do it for a certain reason.
But there's no security or safety
issue. No. There's no correct way.
There's the more common way, the more used way.
Yeah, exactly.
It's very inconvenient because like the outlet in my bathroom, for example, it has the like upside down, I think, because the lettering, the reading is upside down. Like where it says test, it's upside down.
You know, it becomes a question of also common sense as well. Like, you know, if you are, I mean, I personally like the smiley face, if you wish. That's the standard that I like, the two eyes and the thing. So just to make it simple. But, you know, in certain cases, some electricians, for certain reasons, they want to put it a certain way because you're plugging something, you know, that requires a bit more space or what have you. But, you know, honestly, there's no, just to give you an answer, like, if this is going to be an argument, nobody's going to win that argument because they're both right.
Okay, thank you very much. It's just more convenient to have it the other way because when you, for example, I plug in my Alexa, and the plug is upside down. No, Alexa, quiet. The plug is upside down, and so the wire hits the wall, then drags down, as opposed to...
Right.
I agree.
You get what I mean.
So, I agree.
Thank you so very much.
I agree. This is the proper... This is the way I prefer. But is it the correct way? It's not really... it's an argument that is not settled yet, unfortunately.
Thanks, Donna.
Thank you.
Bye now.
Appreciate it.
Bye now. 514-790-0800 to call and talk to Walter here on the Home Improvement Show. Claire, is that you?
Yes, good morning.
Good morning. Where on the West Island are you?
I'm in GGO.
Very nice. Tell us about that heat pump.
Yes, thank you so much. So I had a new heat pump installed last summer, and unfortunately the technician didn't install a switch to turn it off when it got too cold in the winter, and it forced for several weeks. So moving forward to today, I have a very loud noise that is coming from the heat pump that comes into the house, and you hear it on the street, the neighbors hear it, and I would like to know, what can be done to reduce the level, like the noise? It's very loud.
Okay. I'm just worried about one thing. That noise is not normal. So I would even recommend, until a technician check it out, that you shut down the heat pump and operate on furnace until it's checked out. Because if your compressor that is forcing, you might have issues and it's going to cost you a lot more money. How old is the heat pump?
It's new. It's only a year old.
Yeah.
And they did come by, and they told me that it's normal. And it's not.
No. As a matter of fact, there are decibels that have to be respected for neighbors. So the noise, the noise have to be a certain decibel, and the newer models are extremely much more quiet than the older models. So the noise is definitely not right. I would call them and get them to come back. Meanwhile, you're still under guarantee for about a year, usually on labor. So that's what I want you to kind of be careful from, that you don't pass your year, because then they will charge you the labor, and they will if it's a compressor issue, they will cover the cost of the material, because the compressor is usually 5. Some companies go all the way up to 10 years. Okay. But again, these companies, they try to make the money sometimes on the labor, and that's what you don't want them to, because that's expensive as well. So send them a letter, because I don't know if it's you've had your 1 year anniversary of the pump, or it's or not yet.
It's probably 15 months now.
Yeah. Okay. And did this problem start like within the first 12 months, and they've been coming back and forth?
Yes, they came several times. Yeah.
Okay, so if they came within those 12 months, what I would do is I would send a letter indicating all the dates they came, ensuring that the dates that they came are well before the 12-month period, so you can ensure that they still honor the guarantee, because it's an ongoing problem that was not fixed. If not, they will just charge you for the labor and think of it as a new problem, but it's not really a new problem. So they're supposed to honor the guarantee of the installation. That's labor and material as well.
Okay.
And now, sorry to cut you off. Do record the noise. So if you can, you know, videotape it, record it.
Get some audio.
Get some audio as a proof that, you know, it's unbearable. It's very high and what have you.
Excellent. That's a very good point. So in your opinion, you think it's the compressor and not the motor?
It could be one or the other, but I mean, if it is a compressor and it's forcing and it's doing these problems, you might burn the compressor. That's what I'm trying to say. So, you know, until that time, you know, is it working properly? Is it heating properly? Do we even know if it's working?
Yes, it is working properly.
Okay.
Yeah.
And the noise that you're hearing is like a rattling noise or?
No, it's like a buzzing vibration, and it's installed in the back of the house, and in the front of the house on the street, you can hear it.
Really?
Yes, awful.
Now, let me ask you, is it installed straight, meaning level? Like when you look at it, is it a bit crooked? Is the land underneath it level? How did they install it?
It's like on two mounts, and it's screwed to the wall of the house.
Okay, and if you look at it, is it the look off level or look straight?
It looks straight.
Okay, so I would put also, just in case, I would just put a level on top. Because sometimes when it's off level, it might create these buzzing noises as well. Hmm. Okay,
so okay, it's that's a good
you know
point.
Yeah. So just look at these two issues. But it could be a compressor issue if it's making a rattling noise. If it's not making a rattling noise, it could be something else. But do record it so they can have it. So they can have it when they come to you and they can listen to it adequately. It's not normal that it's making that noise.
As I thought, I appreciate your confirmation.
My pleasure.
Good luck, Claire. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome back, Ken.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye. Everyone's welcoming me. It's like I've been gone for a long time.
You've been gone for a long time. We missed you.
I know. Very sweet. That's Walter Assey from Renovco. If you want to talk to him, he's here for another half hour, free of charge. Pick his brain. He's got the answers or the advice for you. 514-790-0800. Ron is ready to go. He's going to talk about his heat pump as well. If you want to talk to Walter again, let us know on the phone or the text line is 514-800. Don's ready to go. Let's head off to the CJAD 800 newsroom.
Whether you're handy or all thumbs, you're listening to the Home Improvement Show on CJAD 800.
Certainly are. Let me turn my microphone on. 9:35, 25 before 10. Just got away from Lisa, who's in here, of course, at 10 o'clock with the car show. If you want to talk to Walter from Renovco, call right now, just like Howard did and Ron did. We'll start with Ron. Ron out in South Shore Brossard, I think, right, Ron?
Yes, correct.
Good morning,
gentlemen.
You have a 2-year-old heat pump, the Terrible Twos.
Should I mention the brand of it? It's a ton and a half unit. It's, I guess it makes sense. It's Trane, T-R-A-N-E.
Yeah.
So obviously when we put it in, we were hoping to put in the high quality product, and that's what we did. Long story short, our previous heat pump we had installed for more than 20 years, and it probably worked so well for 20 years, but finally we put in the new one. What seems to be happening is when we put this in, it went in with what they call a fossil fuel kit because we have an oil furnace. Mm-hmm. So I guess that allows it to switch between the furnace and the heat pump. problem is, I find, is that I find that way too often, even in these milder temperatures, the heat pump's not working. It's the oil furnace kicking in all the time. And I've been sort of sharing that with the installer over the last couple of years, and he tries tweaking it. He says, go into the programming, do this, do that. But is that normal, Walter, for a new heat pump to not be most of the time heating, and it always resorts to the oil furnace kicking in?
Absolutely not.
No, eh?
Absolutely not. Now, the issue is, in most cases, incompatibility between the furnace that you have and the heat pump that you have. Now, not all technicians, unfortunately, tell you that. A trained technician sells usually trained products. So if he can squeeze it in and kind of force it to work, they will try. But they're not usually successful if these two systems are not compatible.
Okay.
Now, I'm guessing your furnace is not a trained furnace, is it?
That's correct. It's not. We were thinking of changing it. We held off a little bit. We were considering maybe going, because that would have removed our, you know, the hydro rate for by energy. And I think that's going the way of the dinosaur anyway. But anyway, that's kind of why we hung on to it for now, because the furnace was in good shape.
So you might end up paying a lot because your furnace is kicking in most of the time. You're probably paying the higher rate of hydro most of the time, which defies the whole purpose of having a dual energy. Now, having said that, the heat pump issue, if it's a question of compatibility, you're going to find it very hard to fix. You might need to either change the furnace or the heat pump.
Yeah. The fossil fuel kit that they put in, it almost looked amateurish in a way, I find. It was a lot of exposed wires and a couple of relays, and I covered it up to make it look more professional, but that kind of made me scratch my head. Like, is this a Quebec-made kind of go-to product to go, you know?
Yeah, I mean, and you're absolutely right with that, Ron. What happens sometimes, technicians Frankenstein something to kind of squeeze it or push it to work. And unfortunately, they're not always successful. You know, a good technician would have done the adequate research. You know, the other thing you want to look at potentially is a thermostat, okay? Because sometimes even the thermostat is the issue. So you should have him come back. It's a 2-year-old heat pump that's fairly new, and he should be honoring his warranty for that.
Oh yeah, I have a 12-year warranty included with labor and everything. So, and the thermostat is brand new. It's one of the smart ones. I can access it from my phone.
Wait a minute, everything. Ron. Not all of them are compatible. Again, you have to do the adequate research, because, you know, it doesn't mean that they're new thermostat and they're smart, they're compatible. Some of them are not compatible with your system. That's why it's worth it for you to check if the thermostat.
But I meant it's a Trane brand thermostat that was teamed up with the unit at the time of install.
Okay, but is it also compatible with the unit? That's the question. So these are the things that you have to ask. It's not a problem necessarily with your heat pump. It's a problem of the commands between the two. Something is failing. And that's what the guy needs to investigate. He's probably trying to avoid it as much as possible, because that means for him switching out the whole unit altogether, right? So
I got it.
It's not like he can go and fetch another brand and stick it in there. The guy is a distributor for trade products. So.
But you answered my question. The heat pump should be on most of the time, even in these fairly mild temperatures still, right? It should be supplying enough heat.
Ron. Now, if it's a newer thermostat, and Trane is a good quality brand, usually, it should work up until -20 in most cases.
So, really?
Yeah. Wow. So that's why I'm saying sometimes it's not right. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Appreciate it.
All right.
Not a problem.
Thank you, Ron. Appreciate that
Thank
call.
You.
All right. It's 9:41. We have time for another one before we break again for the roads. This is Howard out on Pierrefonds, right, Howard?
That's correct. Can you guys hear me?
Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead.
Perfect. Another heat pump problem. So a brand new heat pump was installed this summer. The make is Gree. And it's replacing an air conditioner or a heat pump that was installed about 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. So in the summer, I was not able to go well, I was able to go below 19 degrees Celsius. When it went below 19 in the house, the heat pump would freeze. In other words, outside on the lines, you would see a frost on the lines. So the technician says, by the way, it was installed on an electric furnace.
Okay.
He replaced the heat exchanger inside the furnace because he said the new heat exchanger is more efficient. So the technician is saying that the piping in the house, the conduits, are basically not the right size. He said they're whatever. Previously, like 20 years ago or up until a couple of years ago, everything was working fine. The reason I changed the old heat pump because it was leaking Freon. So does that make sense that the old conduit or the conduit that's already installed is not the right size? He said the new heat pump is very, very efficient, and this is why it's freezing up. Does that make sense?
Most likely not. Most likely. But it could also make sense. There's a very small possibility. The three major reasons why you would have a freezing in a heat pump issue, and say the major reason, so that's the most common reasons, is insufficient airflow, for one. So if, let's say, you have, that's more common in areas where you would have, let's say, dryer vent very close to the heat pump, so you have all that lint sticking to the coils, and then dirtying it up, and then you don't have insufficient airflow in the coils. So that might be one issue. Debris, trees around that keeps on shedding on the heat pump itself, blocking the coils. That could also be the culprit. Now, another thing that is often kind of looked over by technicians for some reason is settling of the heat pump. Is your heat pump installed on a cement pad or? Or is it like actually bracketed into the structure of the house?
Bracketed into the structure. And on your first question, there's nothing that's blocking the coils. So two of those things, are the problem.
Okay. Now, what you really need to look at, if it's installed 100% or on level, because if it's off level a little bit, that will cause problems with freezing.
I checked it with a level, Walter. It's perfectly level. I checked that.
Okay. So if we take that out, I mean, obviously, you're saying it's in the summer, so because sometimes if you have freezing rain or anything like that, that could also cause. Then I don't know what to tell you. There's maybe the freeze start is an issue as well. So let them
start. Which part? I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
The freeze start. It's a part called the freeze start.
Oh, okay, yes.
Okay, maybe they should check that out to see if it's working. How is it working in the winter?
Perfect. We're using it now. It's working perfectly.
Okay. So, I mean, it might be the coils. But they should have told you that from the beginning. The pipes. But why didn't they say that from the get-go?
Which coil are you talking about?
Sorry, not the coil. I meant the pipes. He said that you have to upgrade the size of the pipes, right? Coming in.
These are the conduit. This is the conduit inside the house.
That doesn't make sense. No, I don't see how that would make sense, to be honest with you.
Neither do I. So I'm in the process of writing a letter to GRI explaining everything that went wrong with all of the dates. The technician has been back three times.
Is it the same technician? Is it the same technician that came back? Okay.
Same technician.
So here's a trick for you, Howard. If they don't fix it the first time, they're not going to know how to fix it.
They were on the phone. They were on the phone with the manufacturer GRI, which is has an office here in Quebec.
Yeah.
So I think the GRI technician or service manager is going to have to come out and take a look at it. It's just very frustrating.
Or you should ask for a more senior rep. I've seen this often with HVAC techs. If they come the first time, they come the second, that means they don't know what the problem is.
Walter, this is the very senior rep. He owns the company. Usually he's very good. He said in his lifetime he's never seen a problem with a GRI air conditioning unit. That's why he called GRI, the service manager at GRI. They were on the phone. So I really don't know. I don't think it's the conduit inside the house.
No, I don't think.
Restricting the airflow.
No,
but that's what he says.
Did they put too big of a machine for the size of the home? How many tons?
It's variable, anywhere from 2 to 3 tons. It's variable. It's a fancy machine.
Yeah. And how big is your home?
One they make.
How big is your home?
Well, it's not big. Not a big house.
Okay.
The older unit was a 2-ton. It was more than
sufficient. Yeah. So you have it too. Okay. So that's yeah, wasn't it? Okay. So it's not the size of the machine, and I don't believe the size of the conduit is the issue, to be quite frank with you.
Howard, we got to run. I hope that was some help for you, though.
Thank you very much. I appreciate all your expertise. Thanks, guys.
All right. Thank you. Thank you for listening.
This is the Home Improvement Show on News Talk Radio, CJAD 800.
Almost missed my cue. I was tidying up here, getting this. They're getting the place ready for Lisa.
Don't worry. I got you.
Thank you. Got my back. 9:51 here on the Home Improvement Show, going right to Dan out in St. Lazare. Hi, Dan.
Good morning, gentlemen. Love your show.
Thank you.
I have a simple job that's becoming more complex the more I'm researching it. That's the way it goes.
All right.
I'm retrofitting a bathroom with a vent. I figured out I need a 90 CFM unit for the volume that I have to push out. And I'm going through the attic. And now I'm coming with contradictory information of how long I'm able to put the conduit. I'm going out the gable side of the house instead of the roof. The roof would be the shortest, but I can't find a roofer that will do it under $1,000, which is ridiculous. So I was wondering, what would be the appropriate length for a 90 CFM unit that I could run an insulated conduit through the attic out the gable side? I've come anywhere between 20 feet to unlimited, but that makes a little, not much sense. And it would be a 4-inch diameter conduit, unless you recommend 6. What would be your opinion on that?
I mean, if you can have a fan, that, because it depends on what you could fit to that, but usually I like the 6-inch, personally. Insulated pipe, obviously, right? Because you're going through the attic. Anything that is beyond 20 feet, I kind of grinch at it. I don't like long spans, because obviously the longer you're going to have the span, the more issues you might have. Especially if while you're passing the pipe, you might have some banana effects, so that will restrict the flow even more. So
I have only one elbow from the initial juncture. So there'd be not much loss that way. And as far as choice of material, would you recommend like a plastic flexible or a more rigid? They say that the airflow is better through a more metal or rigid structure, a PVC type affair.
That's always the case. That's true. And you don't have those bends. It's more straight, because sometimes the pipe itself, when it bends and creates that banana effect, you also get restrictions in the flow as well. So if you can do a solid one, that's a much better thing. But if you're able to restrict it to the 20 feet, that will be preferable.
Yes, I should be able to.
Yeah. Yep. Every bend, you lose about 30% efficiency, right? So this is how you want to calculate it. And make sure that you have it on a nice slope if you can, so it doesn't create condensation or you have any backups through the pipe.
Well, perfect. Now you know what I'm doing this Sunday.
Thank you, Dan.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Bye now. 514-790-0800. We got a question from the text line, if you don't mind, Walter. 514-800, by the way, is the text number. Kitchen reno.
Okay.
Complete kitchen reno overhaul. When do you buy the appliances? Is it a mistake to buy them up front, or do you wait until everything is done and then you realize what you have to work with?
Absolutely not. What you have to do is, while you're doing the design with your cuisinist or your kitchen designer,
right,
you should have the specs. Not necessarily you have to pay for those appliances. You can just go to the appliance store, choose what you like, ask them for the specs, and get your designer to design the kitchen as per the specs. Specifically, like, a lot of things are standard, like a dishwasher. You know, unless you want to have a much smaller one, usually it's a certain standard size. The stove is a certain standard size. But cooktops can come, cooktops can come in different sizes.
Right.
Depending on how big you want it. Stoves can come now in different heights and sizes. And fridges. Fridge is the most important part. So if you inadequately design your kitchen, you will run into problem mostly with the fridge. Because now, you know, let's say the old model you have was those fat, deep 30-inch type fridges. The newer ones are, you know, mostly counter-depth fridges. So they tend to be taller and wider, but thinner.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's why I'm saying start with the appliances and then give what you like to the kitchen designer. Having said that, also the kitchen designer can maybe lead you into what sizes you have to stay within. And then you could go and reverse engineer that. But it's always easier if you give that, you know, to the designer first.
Right. So don't necessarily buy them. Just see what you want, see what you like, and ask for the specs.
Yeah. Just to go back, to circle back on the receptacles up and down and what have you, I got a text from an electrician actually right now. And he's saying one of the reasons why they would sometimes put it down as electricians is because some of them are switch operated. Mm-hmm. So it will be a way for the homeowner to identify which, when it's upside down, well, upside down, you call it that, but which one is a switch operated. So that's just to go back on our first caller argument about the switches and
the plugs,
which way to put them. So, all right. You know, that's a good add-on answer to why it's done.
All right. You know what? If we have a call coming in, you want to just grab it, Jimmy? And we just lost it. Sorry. My fault. Question about flooring too. When you're putting down new flooring, do you always overbuy a little bit?
Correct. So yes. Depending on the type of flooring, but it can range anywhere between 5 to 10%. But that also might vary if you have a lot of corners and a lot of cuts.
Right.
So let's say you're in a rectangular room or square room, you know, that's fine. If you have a room full of angles like bay windows and, you know, other awkward angles, then you're more prone to a bigger waste. So you might go up to 15% waste in this case.
Right. Very good. All right. Thank you very much. Another great week, Walter. Have a wonderful week. We'll talk to you next Saturday.
Absolutely.
All right. It's the Home Improvement Show. Thank you so much for joining us. Jimmy G and Master Control sticking around for another couple of hours because Lisa's all ready to go. Lisa Christensen and your calls about your car, your vehicles, and she'll answer and take care of you. 514-790-0800 is the number for the car show. Stay right here on CJAD 800. News is next.